What is going on, everybody? It is episode 49 of the All About Counter-Strike podcast. As always, it's Banks and Devwalk to bring you our thoughts, our feelings, our rage, and our questions about Counter-Strike with some answers alongside of it. And this episode, let's do this because we're actually in different locations. Crazy. I've changed everything, so we'll get into that in a little bit. But it is the 3rd of February, 2026.
You're back on UK time.
The year is going fast. Yeah, I'm back in UK time. It is 22:49 for me, which means it's 23:49 for Devwalk in Sweden. And I am in, not the UK, I am in Portugal. It does have the same time as the UK. Not sure why. Don't know how that made any sense or how they ended up with that. Poor guys. Just had to be the odd ones out like we are and have the awkward time zone. But yeah, I'm moving here for the next 3-4 months while me and my wife have the baby. New baby comes, new family member, you know. Coming to Portugal made sense for just obviously not being in Ukraine where there's war, being where we can get electricity and all that stuff. So Portugal's a pretty awesome place to do it in. I will say this, I'm looking in front of my light. So I have this cool mini office. It's not really set up at all, anything yet. Technically set up. I mean, the internet, I'm off wireless right now. But you'll never guess what. It is in front of me, just pure rain. I may as well be in London. Like, I know it's still
winter.
That's winters
in Portugal.
Yeah, bro. It's like, I left London to get here and there was not as much rain here. So it says severe weather, severe coastal event warning. These conditions started at 12 on Monday. Additional alerts, moderate coastal event warnings, moderate rain warning, moderate wind warning. When I landed, I was sleeping most of the flight. The turbulence hit so hard, you know, in them smaller planes as well, right? Bro, it was rocky and uncomfortable. Yeah. It was not fun.
But I think the weird thing is, I have two questions, but the weird thing about Portuguese weather is that it can change really, really quick. Like you can be out, it's a sunny day, all of a sudden along the coast and, you know, at a restaurant, and all of a sudden, within like 10 minutes, it's just a storm coming in. So like you have to be a bit more, I mean here in Sweden it's just like, okay, it's gonna snow, then it's fucking gonna snow, you know, it's not gonna change, it's gonna be that for the entire day.
Yeah,
and then maybe overnight time it will change something, but well, they're in Portugal, everything can change really quick.
I need to be with the rain jacket, bro, because like I just went out with just like a body jumper, you know, like zip up jumper. No hood, no nothing. I was like, oh, it's kind of nice outside. It's not too cold, you know? And then all of a sudden, it's torrential rain. Like, I'm getting pelted with it. So I just think I've got to carry the rain jacket with me the whole time. But
probably.
What have you been up to?
I have another question.
Oh, you got another question?
Okay. So the house that you're in, have you felt, so like Portuguese houses, from my experience, like cold air and hot air kind of seeps through very, very, like a lot. In the houses?
Yeah.
Is that the same in the location that you're in?
Yeah, we got the aircon on right now, putting heat out there. Because it's like, normally, how I would compare it to the house that we have in UK or like the house I live in Ukraine, the insulation feels good that even if it's cold or whatever, you know, you're not getting hit by it. It also does mean in the summer you will be warm. So like you have to open a window, but that's quite easy to fix. But it's like you came here and obviously no one had been inside and it's just been empty and it was... floor was dead cold, it was not comfortable, aircon had to go on, and you're thinking, boy, I think it must be just the way they built these houses. A lot of them are really old as well. Like inside is nice and modern, but like even the stairs coming down here, there's no elevator to this place. It's in the -1 or whatever it is, and it's kind of like old architecture style.
It would be the same in the summer. I mean, obviously in the summer you don't need the same isolation if you're living in a warm country, so it's probably better for the air to kind of seep through rather than close it in those circumstances. But I mean, you will see. You will see.
I will learn.
But
it's only a few months though.
Yeah. But I've been playing Counter-Strike and I've been playing a lot of Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
Been watching as much Counter-Strike in the background as I can on my screens and on my TV. My girlfriend is not happy. She cannot watch her regular shows because the crack of it's been
important.
On.
Yeah, there you go.
But I've from the grind, I've gone up to 3.2k Elo now on Faceit.
Okay.
So that's pretty good. I'm happy with that. My goal that I set out, I started around 2.4. And the goal that I set out was 3.5, 3.6, around there. I kind of want to be on that, like, you know when you get the numbers that all the pro players have on Faceit?
Yeah.
Where you're like top 1,000 or something?
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'll
be in that lot.
Yeah, okay. I just want to get there. And I mean, I'll take an example. I think, I know like Flatro has... I played some with Flatro as well.
Oh, wait, you're not only solo queuing anymore?
98%. I'll play occasional 2 games at night or something with Flatro. Or he has 3.8 and he's number 571 on Faceit.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty sure you can be like 3.6-ish. So it's not that far away. Currently, I am ranked... Let's see here, actually. I am ranked 152 in Sweden and 4,613 on Faceit.
That's a decent grind, man. That's a real decent grind. It's impressive you've done so much of it solo. Tell me this, when you're soloing, how much do you have to like, not just, I guess you IGL a lot probably, right?
The games that I can. So there's two types of games. There's games where I join the server. People are like, oh, they will call, make the calls. You know, like, we will listen. And those games run really smoothly. I don't usually frag very well in those games, but I usually call. We have great T-sides, and we can eventually close the games out. There are other games where you make a call, and there's one or two guys always never listening. They just do whatever they want. They just run around. They have no mics. They're running around. I just say, whatever. Like, we're not going to make any calls. Just run around. Everyone run around, and we will see what happens. Because you almost doom yourself if you have the group that communicates only be in a group and do the calls while the two silent ones run around. You're not going to really know what's happening on the server or on the map.
You're not going
to
see.
It's just better to spread out, find kills, and do whatever. So it's tough, but it's definitely a mental challenge, face it, when you get those kinds of games. So I've been doing a lot of breathing exercises to get to this point.
tell me now, right, as well. So you're IGLing sometimes, not IGLing the other times, but do you feel like your read for the game, especially like Faceit games, do you feel like you have a good understanding of how some of these type of players play? Like, do you have a good, is it quick, easy? Because I can imagine they're not playing like a usual high level player would, right? It's this random Faceit, like they can aim, they can shoot, but it's a bit brainless at times.
So I would say I can read the game well, but I don't read it in the sense of trying to read pro players' level. I do the same as I used to do when I was a pro in clutches. So I mean, this is going to be a banned word probably, but I always said that if I'm playing a player, his clutch ability is either great, good, or retarded. So based on that, you make different kinds of reads. So what I mean by that is essentially, for example, you have an eco, you're a Mirage, they are CT, your T, and after 5 seconds, they on second round, their window players bought an AWP and jumps under after 5 seconds to clear it, right? That to me is the dumb level, right? That's dumb. You don't need to do that. You don't need to put yourself at the risk. If you're playing those types of players, it's really easy to bait them to do stupid shit and punish it. Like, just say like, okay, we're going to random strafe on timing, top mid or something, and you can probably get away with killing them, even on an eco round. But if they're playing smart, you kind of just have to, okay, they're playing smart. So different types of calls now compared to...
Yeah.
And then it's also like just identifying how fast they rotate is a big thing for me. So... If you, for example, do A smokes, it's silent on the map, and all of a sudden, when you do it, there's 4 guys already on A. Well, why don't you just go 2 guys on A?
Crazy.
You're silent. You're staying 3 B apps. Just chill. do the ace smokes. Yeah. There are four guys on ace, three guys contact on the B guy. So there's like, read how they move on the map and how fast and how, I guess, how many corners do they cut?
Yeah. I do find as well, by the way, that face it is like, at least what I see, I mean, let's not even just talk about my games, but even like high level player-ish games, your elo and above, the over-rotation is real. Like the panic calls and the like, unless they're playing in a group where it's like two or three of them, there's like, if you know when it's like multiple solo players or just like a duo and then three solos, that's when you see the panic rotation crazy. And I'm like, yeah, okay, this is an easy one for them to try and win and play around.
I will say though, after like 2.8, once I reached 3K, my games became, I would say, probably 50% easier to play.
You've got like a better level of people.
2.7 to 2.9-ish scale, there is so many crazy people in that like elo that just ruins everyone's day. It is, for me, and the experience I've had, the elo hell, like the range of elo hell, is between 2.7 and 2.9 for me. Okay. So that's, I think, why I got such a quick jump, is because I'm starting to play with people that also call, also, you know, try to organize, try to make sure that things are working, and also they're higher skilled. So it's easier for me to also adapt to them.
Yep. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, we've done enough of our chit chat. So I'm going to try and get myself a PC over here. I'm working on my laptop at the moment. I'm going to try and get a PC either borrowed or rented or something like that from someone in Portugal so I can stream a bit at the same time. I'm trying to load a message that I had from, here we go, it's just loading now on Instagram. Because the first thing we're going to do is start getting at all of the recent news happening in the scene right now. And a big one, and bro, this didn't make any sense when I first saw the news, was Legacy benching Lux. Now you can say what you want that he was a new IGL, like he was just starting his IGL career at the beginning of last year, but the success he had with Legacy and the way he took this team to a trophy, to a second place at tier one events, not S tier events, not your biggest ones of all the elite teams there, but still CAC was a decent win, Bucharest, the PGL event, when they came second, almost taking Aurora down in that best of five, basically having it. That was impressive. And when I was talking to Lux, I had to hit him up, right? And I want to try and understand. And he said, like, it basically became a mutual decision because it wasn't working anymore. So they couldn't agree on things. They couldn't
make it
work.
That's kind of what I suspected, same view, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
That. You know, he kind of lost the locker room, was my original thought about it. That Dumao and then the boys wanted to play a different style of CS compared to what Lux was comfortable calling. And the clash kind of became there, and therefore they just started having worse results, because the first thing you do is you try to find some middle ground when you're in that kind of way. But that just makes it worse for the in-game leader.
Because you're
nothing
kind of
makes
up
sense
your
anymore. It just becomes a blend. It's kind of like, you know, when we talked about Liquid in the past, when Elish, or was it before Elish, or maybe when Elish just came in, where it was like Shui calling, new coach bringing his ideas, and Elish kind of wanting to do his thing, and it looked really messy at first, and that's kind of the middle ground you get into when you have a disagreement on how you want to play. But I think it's sad. I think Lux was not only, you know, it was his first year full-time IGLing, I think.
Yes, yeah, 100%.
I think he did really, really well. And it's really tough on him to kind of get the boot so early on. I think they could have tried a little bit more. But it also depends, you know. I don't know. It's a little bit disappointing. I thought he was a great player. I think they played a fun style to watch. I think all of that kind of made sense for the individuals they had. I understand it is an inconsistent way of playing.
We spoke about that.
it was still it was still interesting, you know. And it probably requires a little bit more work than you think to play that sort of style. You kind of need to develop new moves. You can't just reuse everything. It becomes obvious, very readable. And that's probably the kind of brick wall they've hit in this kind of period where they've even domestically kind of struggled against teams they should be winning against. So, yeah. And I mean, obviously, this ties into the next piece of news.
Yeah, we put it all together because this one for me, right? A lot of people are going to look at this and just think, how did Art get another chance? Why is someone picking up Art again? With what you've just said about like them not agreeing how to play, how the legacy players might want to play, Art is probably the best IGL for a Dumao and for a Lato and like what they want to do in the server.
Yeah.
You know? It's not an upgrade as firepower comparing to Lux. It's not an upgrade in clutchability that Lux had spades of. It is a player-to-player downgrade, but it is a vision upgrade and an experience upgrade that I think can play into the pieces the Legacy want. And probably, so think of me this way, right? If you're Lux, normally you want the org support and the coach's support into keeping you and keeping your vision. Yeah, that's the ideal world.
Yep.
But some players and some teams have more power than others. Dumao and Lato, for example, obviously, I definitely know Dumao has been, he agreed to stay on Legacy. He has this good relationship with the people that own it. You know, like he's the star player. He's the key figure. So he's probably got a lot of say in this. So
but
they probably
them
look
two
to
are the ones
thought,
they're investing in.
Yeah, exactly. They're the ones that they see the future with, right? Yeah. And it's been a long time. It has been a long time. So this is a strange move, but we won't even get to see them play at Clusion of Poker because it's kind of crazy. They got replaced by FUT. They didn't even go. They were going to go with their coach at first. So the first time we'll see them is going to be Pro League. And that's going to be on the 1st of March. So they're going to have some good time. And if I'm them, considering Pro League is going to be online in Europe and then into the LAN, just boot camp like crazy in Europe now.
Yeah.
Whole team.
I think honestly, it's probably a great choice from them. You know, kind of stop the bleeding. They're still in this kind of rank where they can get the invites. They're kind of in that BC game range right now, I think.
Like the
lower.
Yeah,
but they are in the rankings. In the rankings, I'm talking, you know? They're 18th. They will probably fade away a little bit. Where's BC game? They're 24th. So they're close to each other. It's about 100 points. But I think it's smart from them. I also want to add that for me, it makes sense not only playstyle-wise, but it also makes sense role-wise for Art. Sadsin, or is it Nissim? No, Sadsin, the AWPer.
Mm-hmm.
He is a very passive, supportive AWPer. Art on a secondary AWP could be amazing. On a double op setup with Art being the more aggressive one, willing one to kind of put himself out there compared to the style of oping that Sadsin has. I could see that working as well, like on a personal level for Art as well. And we saw some of his, you know, oping even at the major was great. He was probably the best oper on the server, even though he played an anchor. But I'm wondering if he, I don't think he's going to have the same role that he had in his old Fluxo team in this Legacy. I think he's going to have a little bit more freedom. And we're going to see a little bit more of this old Art compared to what we've seen in
Fluxo. Which is
going to
work exactly what we were talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on.
It's going
to
be interesting, no matter what.
Yeah. I'm down for it. I was against it because I really like Lux. I don't think that, I'm agreeing with you. It should have been some more time that they should have given Lux. And I really liked him. I really liked the fact that in his first year of being an IGL, he lifted a trophy, did better than Payne, and it seemed like they were all having a good time. But obviously, the mood and the chemistry and the team and in the server is so important. So it doesn't seem like there's any hard feelings. It was just like he told me directly it was a mutual decision. They couldn't get it agreed.
Yeah.
And I think Lux can definitely find himself a team. And if he can have them young and buying into what he's doing and saying, then it's obviously not going to be the last we see of Lux for sure.
No, I think he's a good player. Then. So,
yeah. The next one, this one I kind of like, man. Jota, on loan from Aurora, goes to Eternal Fire. If people didn't know, Jota was on Eternal Fire Academy League, Academy team, a little long time ago in his career. Didn't ever get the call up to the main roster. Obviously joined Aurora later on throughout it, right? And now they're going to use him on loan to test who he replaces out of M-Star and Kha'Zix. Let me just get your thoughts on this, Devwalk. It's like, how would you feel if you're those two guys, if the team is literally like, yeah, this guy, he will replace one of you? Like, what are we doing? What is this
I would write in chat before prac, I play short. Or I pick on. Just so I have more frags than the other guy who gets the shit rolls.
Yeah, that's it, dude. Like this for Jota because Jota has experience in international teams, yeah, not just Turkish teams. He's going to be linking up with Demka, Rigon, Waro, and then obviously M-Star and Kha'Zix being the other ones from Eternal Fire. Personally, both M-Star and Kha'Zix are a bit on the more mature side. I'm not going to call them old. They're only 27. But Kha'Zix has the more experience. Probably is the one that end up staying. And M-Star will be the one that replaced. That's how I see this working out. You know? But obviously, Eternal's Fire goals now is like bigger and better on an international scene. I'll just say, I don't know who's going to keep the team in check of tilting and raging and whatever else is going on. Because Jota, he can get loud and hype, but he's a pretty calm guy. And then you've got Waro. We know what he's been through. We understand what our Rigon will be like, you know, if his head goes down. Demko's going to have to be cracking jokes every day. He's just going to have to be the funny guy. Doesn't on paper look wild?
Yeah.
You're like, it's hard to see this
work. It is a wild team. It's a very wild team. I mean, I wish them the best. I'm not sure they're going to be...
Political answer now from Devwalk.
Yeah, I don't know. I can foresee a lot of raging in this team. And I mean, to be fair, any Voro team is a raging team, first of all. But Rigon, he can rage as well. I know that he was on the later period when I was coaching him. He actually became really good with that and had tuned it down a lot. So I was really proud of him for. But I could see maybe, you know, there's a chain reaction of people tilting. Turkish people, maybe also known for tilting a little bit or being hot-headed at least. A bit fiery.
I think Kha'Zix and Jota have to keep that so calm. They have to keep it so chill for everyone else because, yeah, like, I understand what Eternal Fire is trying to do. They're trying to maximize their opportunity to grow as a team and get up there. But it's like the way you've assembled this team is kind of out there, man. It's really out there. And Warrior's going to have to find a way to beat all the accusations of being a rager and like demanding too much and stuff. Like he has to be a completely different player than what we've seen.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to follow.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with him across him. After this one, I knew about this stuff from years ago anyway, but it's nice to get some clarification on it. So there was a Danish podcast that's called Bootcamp and Config went on it. And he revealed about his monthly salary while part of Astralis. He said it was like $28,000 to $30,000 on Complexity. And he shared a story that he originally agreed $15,000 under Complexity. And then he found out that BlameF was on twice of that, which prompted him to get more money. Yeah. So this is an interesting take because I will say this. There was times where Complexity were trying to get players to join them. Yeah. They were trying to attract the best players to be the juggernaut, to be the winning team, to be title contenders. The money they did throw at players was way over their value. Like, even though BlameF was good back then, he wasn't worth 30K a month. And we still have a problem of this where, like, some players now, because I think PlayGG put out some article about, like, different salaries and predicted salary ranges. There's a lot of players that are on salaries that are not sustainable. Like, this is not something that... It's almost like Mickey Mouse money. We're not... Like, esports isn't there.
Yeah.
It isn't there at all. And not everyone's a Vitality, not everyone's a Falcons, you know. I'm talking about other teams in it. And I do like that if some of these numbers, I would say, are more accurate from the knowledge I have, that some orgs are playing it very smart and well. But it means it's hard to attract the players maybe you want sometimes, where people say, oh, they should get this player. Well, this player thinks he should be on this money because matey boy over there is on crazy money. You know, my friend's earning this.
No, I agree. I mean, even Stuko, I read he wrote a tweet about it as well, where he said,
"Stuko loves telling people salaries."
Yeah. While I can't confirm the exact numbers, I know a lot of players went to orgs around 2019, 2020 to renegotiate for salary increases because of this Blame F benchmark. Somehow it got leaked how much he was making, and everyone felt like, I could earn more. And while it wasn't the only reason, it definitely inflated the market for quite some time.
Yes.
Fair play for Blame F for getting the bag.
Yeah, no, like if you can do it and someone's going to pay you it, cool. But also you have to then be willing to take a massive step down when a better offer comes for you from like a success point. And this is what I think is the difference between good players and great players in terms of how they manage their career, because I know some players have taken a career, not a cut, but it's like a, you know, like a lateral move, you know?
Yeah.
So they've just stayed same salary, but they've joined a real S tier team. So it's like this, you think of this, I'm just going to give, this is no real example, but just say Vitality come to you and you're playing for Alliance. Yeah. But Vitality say you can join us, but you have to keep your Alliance salary, yeah? You have to prove yourself on that. Any player who doesn't get too into their own heads or too ego would say, this is a good move for me, I just make that move anyway. You try and work something out good in the contract or whatever for the future, for the next years and how it works out. But there are players who'd be like, I know some of these players, they'd be like, no, I'm not taking that offer. It's too low, I'm worth more than that, you know? And that's where the ego gets a bit crazy. That's where the understanding of their own value gets crazy. And they're looking at numbers, not career success.
It's kind of a two-pronged thing, because especially if you're a young talent, I think most people that has had an esports career has gone for that very, very low salary to start with, just to get into the big orgs, to play the big games, to get more known, etc. In that sense, it's a good move-ish, but obviously you're worth more at that point. That's why they want you in the first place.
Yeah.
But it's scary to be the player getting that offer and being the one saying, you know, I want more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's scary to be in a position like, I really want this deal, and be the one to say, no, this is not fair. I want more. And them being like, because they don't reveal, you know, in these conversations, they don't say, we just want you. They're looking they always say this fucking broad statement where it's like, we're looking at several different options and blah, blah, blah. You know, like,
we
just want to kind of confirm with you what you would be willing to go for.
But it's also, if you have a good agent, right? That's also a fact. I always say this. There are a lot of agents who are useless. There are a lot of agents who are lazy. But there are a few agents that are good and capable. And it's about finding out. Because there are some agents, I would say, that I hear the same waffle or bullshit for the past 5 years. And they haven't made on that promise, you know? But they've told them, I'm going to do this, this, and this for you. And then they're unhappy at the end of it because they don't get what they need. It's not about getting them on the right team, but it's about over-promising and under-delivering. Yeah? But what you should do is under-deliver. I know, you should over... You should
under-promise
and over-deliver. That's the one. That's the one I meant, you know? That's how it should be done. Or you should just be fair and straight with what the options are and the opportunities are, because you can't just go out there and get the biggest salary and the biggest gig and the big-name teams looking. But I think for some players now, well, look at this. Flamesy was a genius. Flamesy left OG and left OG out of contract. So he went with no cost to Vitality and they just paid him a salary. And I'm sure he would have got a bump up from that and probably extra because of the situation. You know, they didn't have to pay anything. But like him and Messi are not the names like Rops, for example. Yeah? No. So you know your Rops and Zai were getting whatever they're getting. And then your Mezzi and your Flamesy, they're going to get the trophies. They're going to learn. They're going to get a lot of experience from this. But I'm sure their starting salary isn't what the salary they're on now is. I don't know. By the way, I have no factual information. But I mean, there's got to be some tier up on this based on this and results and bonuses and
usually achievements. Orgs today have a achievement progressive salary. Like there is some, even in the lower tiers, it would be something like this is X salary. If you reach mm-hmm. this kind of ranking, if you win a tournament, qualify for this, which is important for the org, you get a salary bump. So it's like a give and take. And that's okay. usually in most contracts. And it's also one of the things that I've always advocated for every single time that I've been a coach for a team is that I've always said, like, we can start lower, but as long as we have an achievement-based process, and mm-hmm. it's reachable, it's, you know, something that we all can be fine with. Like, I think that's better in both
motivation
for the team and healthier for the team, not to sit on big salaries, not achieve anything and just slump downwards because you're living a good life in some sense. But still have goals to reach. Okay. We need to really put our minds in because in 2 months, we can do this for our contract. You know, we can get a salary bump. So let's go for this, you know. It's easy as a coach as well to have that as a carrot or whatever you want to call it. I don't know what it's called in English. Carrot in Swedish.
I got you fully. All right. And the last bit of news, and this is just getting wild now. Virtus Pro. You know, like this org is so screwed, man. I'm laughing not at the players.
They have the perfect picture as well.
Just the karma. So Virtus Pro exit local Russian LAN in last place. Bro, they lost to WW and Rustech. I don't know who either of those teams are. Rustech is ranked 200. WW's got Deco on. Yeah.
Rustech definitely sounds like an evil organization based in Russia.
For real. It has Supra on, though. We know Supra from. Where do we know Supra from? He's from Gambit
Supra, Youngsters. Hot. It's Supra from Gambit Youngsters, man.
Yeah, there you go. So he's there, you know. But I mean.
He's bumped cigarettes off me several times.
Of course. But this is a LAN, bro. This isn't some online excuse. This isn't a best of one. This is best of three LANs where you, like, just let's look at the players that are on this team, right? You've got Perfecto. You've got, see, I can't remember who's on the roster anymore. Flip Fame, yeah? You've Bist got Toro, who obviously comes from the Academy team, and Bist as well. Now, if you didn't think that was bad enough, the first rumors that were said, which, by the way, I actually kind of agreed with. It was like, bench the whole team, pick up another team within the top 20. I thought, if you're VP, you're like, you're a prestigious organization in Counter-Strike by name value, yeah? It's been there since I was playing CS in 2003. VP is a long, long-standing name of the game. They have quietly fumbled every good player that's come through their doors. They lost Jane, they lost Dastan, they lost Yakinda, like... Even Kicker was at the major with MIBR over VP.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's the fall off has to be studied. The karma is hitting them so hard. Like, they made a problem with getting Electronic, yeah, having his IGL, Jame going out. Flit and Fame are just slowly fading into non existent. Like, they can't carry games. They can't work within these systems, you know?
But they also have Perfecto. A rookie IGL. Yes. Perfecto is like, very experienced. But he's a rookie IGL. They've like made so many gambles in this squad. It's so many gambles.
From an academy team and Perfecto. You know, when I said this on this podcast, when they picked up the first academy league player, I said that is the first academy league player who ever got a promotion from VP Prodigy since like 2000. Yeah? No. 2020. There you go. I was going way too far back. So first time ever. But then doing two of them. It's such a stretch. But what that says to me is money's running out. You know, they paid a lot of money for Electronic. They paid a lot of money for Perfecto. They're trying to make all these things work and then it all goes to shit. It's like, it's so bad for VP. You're not at majors. You're not at big events anymore. Like, where are they ranked in the world right now? Where is VP?
They're 88th in VRS. They also have a coach named Problem.
88.
That's...
he is the problem. No, I don't know. I don't know.
No, he's not the problem. But it's just funny that his name is Problem. It just says, like, you know, we see these results, we scroll down, we see a coach problem.
If you're him, yeah, and you're thinking of this nickname, you want to be a coach, maybe you change your nickname to Problem Solver.
Yeah.
Not Problem. Yeah. You don't want a coach called Problem. We laughed at them when they messed up on the visas. We thought that was a huge mistake, yeah? And then we joked about, like, all the changes they're going through. But this is the very lowest you can go. And now the rumors, by the way, I saw it. Did we write it in? It is rumored now that Fame and Perfecto are going to be benched. So just roll with me here. Maybe I could understand Perfecto because... new IGL, rookie IGL, yes, he's experienced stuff, but it's not working out. Maybe they're agreeing that this isn't fine. But Fame as well is like a legacy player. You won the major with him and Flit. Like, I didn't expect that. And so if you're going to bench two players, you just buy a core now. You have to buy a core.
Yeah.
But this doesn't make sense. Well, okay. I don't know which core they can buy.
It's way too late in the season. Like, I'm looking at this.
We need to find a regional ranking.
Gamer Legion. There you go.
No, we can't keep selling Gamer Legion. Okay. We're going to do VRS Europe, yeah? And they need a team of like a Russian core. Now, let's just laugh and joke. Imagine they tried to buy Paravision. By the way, not going to happen. Like, that's not possible. Okay. Does BC Game get a few more games in, keep Electronic, Simple, and Muterist, and then take two from VP and they become, I don't know. No. Namiga? 29th in the ranking? Could that work?
It's not going to solve any of your issues. It's ranked 41 in the world, 29th in Europe.
Yeah, they kind of screwed them.
Like,
dude, they're so cooked. They're so cooked.
There's nothing
I'm laughing, but I do feel a bit bad, you know? I do feel a bit bad.
Yeah. But they made their own bed, so it is what it is.
Now they got to lay in it. That's what we say. You made your bed, now you lay in it, son. You have to deal with that.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's talk about... So I'm going to just go through... Krakow now, or Krakow, whatever you want to call it. Stage one, stage two. Stage one, I watched so much. I watched nearly all games. Stage two, you're going to have to carry me because I was traveling. I was traveling, I was moving. I wasn't so much in it and seeing games. First team I want to start with here, mate. And because there's so many teams here, we're not going to give it our usual full spill. We are going to have to run through a little bit faster on some of it.
Okay.
Bait was obviously trying something new with their... yes, that factually they were terrible. But we were looking at the new young player coming in. I'd heard nothing negative about Segukawa, as I said. Yeah, I just heard talented player from Ukraine, that can AWP. Dude, he wasn't the problem in this. But guess what? It is a problem when you throw a rookie 16-year-old into Krakow, which is basically Katowice, with not even all the elite teams, but all the pressure and all the cameras and everything. He didn't get a dry run into anything. He went from playing no HLTV into five maps at Krakow, getting dumpstered on, getting beaten by NRG.
And fired.
Like, and then, and then they kicked him, man. Like... we can wrap this all into one. Bait get Sizzy. Now, the thing what crazy about this, and I need to, no one's told me, so I don't know understand what's happening here, but they get him on loan from Spirit Academy. Yeah. Now, This was Sizzy, who I said on this podcast was rumored to be joining before Segu Kawa, and then it happened. So something changed. And then obviously, maybe it went so badly with Segu Kawa, which it's not, you, I'm not blaming this young 16-year-old kid, but it obviously went so badly that someone at Bates said, whatever Spirit asked for, whatever money, we're doing it. Like, just give us this boy. Like, we need to make this happen. Because now this makes sense.
But at the same time, what the fuck did they expect? Like, it's too big of a jump from having zero HL TV games to all of a sudden playing some of the best teams in the world. It's not a matter of skill at that point. It's mental. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to kind of take the steps. I mean, I remember myself, the first time I got streamed, I fucking shat my pants. I had the worst game ever. My hands, I couldn't aim, I couldn't do anything. And that you get online to that point because it's just, yeah, but you take that step and I've played a streamed game and it goes well the next time. But they didn't even give it a chance for him to kind of catch his footing a little bit and go into the next tournament and see, okay, did we have something here? They just said, no, you're not good enough. You don't have it. And then, you know, moved on to the next guy. That's what I don't understand. If they were actually betting on a person to mm-hmm. be better and to be the one that they thought would, you know, be replacing Hetrick in this team, then why the fuck aren't you really giving them a shot at it? It's like they throw them into the deep water and they're asking him, can he swim? Like, and they don't know him before. They've never seen him in water. They just throw him out there in like the fucking Atlantic and see, like, swim home. Let's see what you got, you know?
It does not make sense. People are going to think, like, I'll just defend Bait because of the Ukrainian team. Nah, man. Like, whoever's made these decisions, you effed up so badly. Like, they lost to Pain, which is not too bad, right? You could lose to Pain, even though it's Pain with two new players. But you also lost to NRG. It is going to hurt your VRS ranking a bit. You're 15th right now, but it's like, this is not going to have positive results for you because this is on LAN and you change the player to do it. Yeah. And then on top of that, I already complained when they did Hetrick so dirty by dumping him after all the transfers had happened. So he couldn't get a new team for the season. Like, he sat there with no team, no chance, no opportunity because it was all done last minute. So you behave badly to Hetrick. You just behave badly to this 16-year-old. You dragged another 16-year-old in. And maybe Sizzy's even now in his head thinking, you know what? If I play one bad tournament early on, I'm getting the same treatment. That's not positive for you as an organization.
But what is it called? It's like this effect of, like, when you think you're too big for what you are. You, like, it's some kind of madness, like grandeur madness, whatever.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean.
Like, it feels a little bit like that because they just, with Hetrick, reached their best possible placing in the rankings. Yep. And now they're like, okay, now we're going for number one. Like, what?
Jumping the gun.
What is happening? It's too quick, you know? Like, they bet all in on green all of a sudden and it just didn't work out.
They went from almost making it to playoffs of a major, playing Na'Vi quite close on one of those maps. I think it might have been Train.
But they were like rank 11, 12 or something. Like, really good.
Yeah.
Like, for the rest of the year. And they just throw it all away.
And yeah, and now they're in this bad spot. We'll have to see what Sizzy can do, but I hope they give him a nicer way in because it wasn't nice for Segu Kawa. I said we don't want to spend too much time on this, so we need to try and go through these teams as well. Passion UA quickly, because Passion UA was a team I was really enjoying. Yeah. Losing to G2, it's not too bad. Should have been able to win against NIP. I feel like they should have had that win against NIP. They're now going 0-2. They went out last place of Blast Bounty as well. This is where now I start to have more concerns about what they can do. Because if you remember, they introduced Mirage to their map pool for Blast Rivals Hong Kong. I saw some positives. I saw what they could do. The major was positive, almost making playoffs as well. You know, like, there's all these things that were right on the cusp of it. And then they've come back into the start of this year. And I'm not seeing the same team. I'm not seeing the same team.
But to be fair, this is also against what I considered to be probably one of the worst NIPs so far that I've seen in the past year. Like, they look actually quite rusty, quite bad at times. It doesn't look like they have the same oomph, you know, like punching power as they're playing. And I don't think that's, Cairns' fault or anything. I think it's just like they haven't really gotten all the pieces together yet. It could be something that maybe one, like Cairn doesn't know all the strats, so it feels like Snappy feels limited in his calling, etc. It could be many things, but it's definitely not the hottest looking NIP that Passions was losing to.
Well, let's just transfer straight into NIP then, because NIP, we were getting more positive about them at the end of last year. They bring Cairn in now, We thought it would start off more positively. Even that game against Liquid, when it was the full roster of Liquid at Blast Bounty, showed me positive signs. But like their nuke has fallen off, They lost to Liquid 2-0. This was Liquid with Crimbo as a stand-in, by the way. They just about beat Passion, and then they lose to BC Game. Now, people can say it's BC Game was simple, but I mean, I was putting NIP into this bracket of you could break into that top 15, top 10 of the world potential for VRS. And right now, that's not it. I'm not seeing it. And I don't think one player changes that much.
BC Game is a much worse team, or should be a much worse team than this NIP team. It does not, just because you have Simple all of a sudden put you ahead. I think this is almost an embarrassing loss for them in the qualification stage. They should have qualified. That's it. I mean, great on BC Game. Simple Electronic had a smashing game. But as you say, Nuke, it's not great. I mean, the Nuke T side was actually fine. It's something that I normally feel like NIP can kind of fumble at times, as their like main map feels very like, I don't know. It's maybe it's yes, sometimes easy to read that they like to go for early like inner pops, a lot of that stuff, a lot of like grouped up kind of plays and kind of mash their way into bomb sites with good utility and executes. And sometimes that sort of calling can fall way short. But they did get 6 rounds on the board on T side, but only posted 3 on the CT, which is very, very concerning. Against what I thought was a quite, let's use the right word here for BC Game, messy BC Game at times.
Messy, uncontrollable, frustrated. We'll get into them in a little bit. We're touching them probably more towards the next stage. We're doing our first set.
But disappointing from NIP. I'm at a point where they're not my betting horse anymore.
So as I said, I thought this year they'd be like a top 15 to top 10 team grinding their way up, even after the Cairn edition. But now they're in the worrying part, because you got the opportunities you wanted that you worked so hard for in VRS. They wanted this so much. They were grinding. They were pushing every interview, VRS, we're working our way through. We're going to these lands, blah, blah. And then you get the chance to hit the big leagues and you don't hit at all. And so that's a red flag for me. That's a big red flag for me. Got to touch on Legacy, but just very quickly, because Legacy in the end, now we know obviously what happened. At the time, because we didn't know what was going on, this looked really bad. Losing 2-0 to BC Game and the way they did on that overpass, when you had a 10-2 lead and then you fumble it and then you get 13-1 on the last map. And then they lose to FUT. Now, FUT's a really good team. FUT's my team of like what you were describing NIP as. FUT's the team I see like going really far this year, like having some success. I don't mean trophy lifting or something like that, but like this is a team that can break into putting themselves in a good position if they can keep this lineup together. But I just looked at this Legacy and thought, oh, okay, that's another bad result. Like, this is not looking good. So, but now we understand everything. We also don't need to touch on Heroic.
It kind of looks like the actual argument started on this overpass and kind of transpired through Inferno in this BC Game. And then it was like, let's drop it. Let's have a last ditch attempt to solve this and play our game. We know we can do it. They go into foot, get a little bit stomped as well, and said, fuck this, man.
Nope. Doesn't happen like that. Didn't work. Didn't work at all. Yeah. Heroic, we won't touch on because it was obviously a game with Youngster, no Alcarin in there. So not much to say on them, really. Pain, is not the same pain as what we know and love. Still, I didn't catch, what game did I see of theirs? I saw the Astralis game and I saw the Bait game. I didn't see the Aurora game. But my thing for here is that Snow has these good roles and positions, still not in a great spot. The mood is supposed to be better, but it's not clicking right now. And I thought, okay,
I still think they look better. They are just in a position where they're going to need a bunch more time. Like, they're going to need at least... I would say, if we look at the results-wise, they lost to Astralis. I think Astralis looked good. So I wouldn't, you know, like, fault them too much about this loss. I wouldn't fault them too much about a loss against Aurora. I think these two teams are just a little bit too early on for them to be beating. They still made it at least competitive against Astralis and not at all against Aurora. But beating Bates, fine. But I'd give them 2 months. 2 months.
Okay, two more months. So basically just up until the major. Yeah, okay. Game Legion. I feel like I was just over positive at Blast Bounty because they beat Passion, they beat Aurora. Then they lose in this CCT event. Yeah, they lose to a team called Betem, I'd never heard of. They lose to Aurora when it's on LAN. They beat Heroic, which has a stand in. Then they lose to Astralis. Like, I'd never questioned last year PR's performance and how he was playing, but now I'm starting to worry about him coming undone without Ash there, without ZTR, without having this comfort of how it was before, just because of what he said to me in those interviews he did during Blast, where he was like, yeah, you know, I got to get comfy again, got to get used to the IGL. Like, yeah, there's a lot of change that's gone around you, but you're so young and talented. Like, you are so individually, mechanically skilled. There was rumors of obviously him going to Mouse. There was rumors of other teams being interested in him. Like, he is a hot prospect. He needs to now, like, show up, especially in some of these games where you're playing not as good teams.
No, I agree. I think Gamer Legion for me is a little bit hot and cold. Like, they can have really, really good games and look sharp. Like, the calling is on par. Their individuals are shining. And then all of a sudden, it feels like they can never really get going. And that's kind of what I saw this tournament. You know, you can look at the Astralis game, they never really got going, they got absolutely demolished. You look at the Aurora one, same thing there. And then, you know, obviously Heroic, they were the ones that were hot all of a sudden. That's the, I think PR, let's look at it. He had a 0.31 rating in the opening game against Aurora.
It was that bad. I know he played bad, but I didn't look at a rating. 0.31.
Yes.
Wow.
I can give you the full statistics.
That must be his whole worst.
That's probably his worst ever.
Ever.
He has 8.33 in two maps. So one map, 4.16. The other map, 4.17.
I don't know if they have a mental coach, you know.
On Dust 2, he had a minus 15.72% swing.
God damn. He must have been going for everything and just dying.
That is incredible. Either way, we're not going to... He is a good player. Obviously, had a real shit map.
Yeah.
But it's just, I feel like the game that they won, he played really well in. He had a 130 rating.
So he is the one that needs to do well. Like, that's what I said. It's him and Rez, especially as Hypex is now performing well. I'm still loving what I'm seeing from Hypex.
Hypex is good, man. I think he's good.
They finally got an AWP they can use, and now the other pieces are crumbling. Like, what the hell is going on, man?
Yeah, and then against Astralis, right, a 0.60 rating again. But it's the weird thing is you usually have these games where you have a little bit of a period. Mm-hmm. You're bad. And then, I'm starting to get good again. And there's a line of consistency, but here's just bad, good, bad.
So it's just up and down the whole time.
Yeah, which kind of correlates with what I was saying with how Gamer Legion, maybe it's even up to PR that his performances are a little bit inconsistent right now. He's not in the right headspace, yep. and the team kind of suffers for it in some regard.
Yeah. Last team to touch on is Liquid. Obviously, they had Crimbo standing in. I'll just say this. This was a great showing for Crimbo as an individual about what he can offer. He does end with a 0.96 overall rating for the whole event, yeah? But I mean, you come in last minute, you have an absolute monstrous game against NIP, you play close against G2, you lost to Foot, but obviously I keep praising Foot, you know? I would just say that this was the best of a bad situation. It's obviously a family emergency, something super bad for NAF, and this saved them just going out last place, losing a bunch of points and looking weak, you know? Crimbo came in, did his job to help, and made the best of a really bad situation. So I'm fine with this, you know?
I think, honestly, they were probably a little bit unlucky. They had to play Foot. I think they probably could have, in most other matchups, had, you know, qualified.
Favorable or even, yeah.
I think Foot is on a different, like, they're on this, like, newbie start level way up here. They've grinded, like, 200-300 more faced games than everyone else before the start of the year and season. It just feels like their individuals are a little bit more hot right now.
And then we get into stage two. So we said the teams that would make it through, from stage one. We got our list up. So, you said teams that would go through.
We had initial matchups as well.
Ah, we had initial matchups as well. Okay, initial matchups.
Which didn't go well.
I only got three correct and so did you.
We're worse than like flipping a coin, man.
You would have just been better not listening to our predictions on opening games. So the only games you got right was G2 Passion, choosing G2. Astralis Pain, choosing Astralis for me. Paravision, Heroic, which we both got, and you picked Aurora over Gamer Legion, which I probably should have done thinking about it. We both picked Fut, who started off losing to 3D Max. 3D Max came out looking better than they did, but we'll touch on them later on. Yeah. Teams to go through, we did better though. Yeah? This is more positive.
It was a little bit of a clown fiesta because in the video, Banks says 9 teams and I say 7. So I just picked Pain.
Because how did we count on our fingers on
just
video
after,
and still
after the
up?
Fact, when I knew Pain was relegated, I picked Pain as my 8th to not just get a free point. I just want to clarify that. It's true, though.
If I check with our producer, I don't think that's going to work the same way because he didn't let me make any changes.
Yes, I was literally picking it with him. Either way,
right now.
That's the official answer I have on the situation. But so
we said Bait would go through, G2 would go through. I said Pain, you said Pain, you said Legacy, both said Paravision, both said Nip, we both said Foot, we both said Aurora, and I did say BC Game will go through. I called the BC Game going through. So that's where I got my little extra win over you.
Absolutely.
So I got bullshit. What do you mean absolute? Why?
I'm just saying it. Let me comment.
No, but I mean,
you continue.
I'm just gonna
slide in some comments.
You're just throwing daggers at me through the screen, through the camera. Trying to get me, man. Oh my god.
Yes. And I picked Pain there.
Yeah, and then you pick Payne. So in terms of teams going through, we wouldn't do too badly. Big surprises was NRG and 3D Max going through. I think they were big surprises.
The worst thing is, you know when we recorded that video? A day after, I played a Face It game with Nitro, OC, and Bro.
Well, they were in your ELO lobby.
We were in the same team.
Oh, you were playing with them?
Yes.
Did they know who you are? Like, because the young, well, I guess Nitro would be the young one, probably not.
Well, I mean, it wasn't like we had a normal conversation. We just like, sup, man? It's like, everything good? and then we just played.
Yeah, yeah.
But either way, they were looking fucking good. We were playing CT side of Mirage. I'm playing fucking B apps. They're just running around the map doing different shit all the time. We're playing, and I'll tell you, we're playing Tenir, Sun Pios, and Nerds on the other team.
What lobbies are you, bro?
And we fucking, I think we 12-0'd CT side on Mirage. Oh. Like, OC was hitting bangers, bro. His aim was so crisp. And Nitro aggressive moves. OC to after, liquid. Like, they looked really good. Like, I was like shocked how crisp everything was from them. So if I ever had that game, I would have actually praised them a little bit because they're individual level. Even though it's a face-it game, you can still bit of eye test, see how good these individuals were. And they looked really good. And especially on Mirage.
Clearly, Unk, and you are the Unk. You still got it as well. You're rolling around these lobbies just casually right now, dropping names on the podcast. Like, oh, Tanir, Sun Pius, OC, Nitro. Like,
I think we won like 12-3 or something, like, or 13-3.
That's a decent lobby, man. That's a decent lobby. Oh, that's good. So yeah, look, we'll talk about the teams that went through later, but NRG, G2, 3D Max, Paravision, Thut, Astralis, Aurora, BC Game, they went through, right? BC Game seemed to be a surprise for a lot of people, but they did make it work. And we'll touch on all their results when we come into the later bit. But we need to start off stage two. Now, I want to say this for everyone at home. I already openly admitted I was moving to Portugal. I was doing my visa stuff and I'm getting ready for like baby coming. So I didn't watch all the games from stage two. I wasn't at home. I didn't have that time. But even if you are like us who love Counter-Strike and you're trying to watch as much as possible, when there's two streams running, even if you've got multiple monitors, like you could, sometimes I stream and watch a game on the other side, but I'm still going to watch two games. There is so much with this schedule and format that it's hard, bro. It's hard for people who love the game to keep track of it. Like I was looking at matches and trying to choose based on like who I think will be give the most exciting game.
Yeah, but it's like even tonight we're looking at, it was Mouse Falcons and Aurora Vitality at the same time, and you're just like,
so I skipped Aurora Vitality just because it was,
I had
just
one game up qualifier on the TV here and one on my phone next to my PC.
Yeah,
like it was really hard to kind of follow what game. I literally watched on my phone like this, and then like, okay, it's pause here.
You hear something? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dude, I chose, you know, the games that were like qualified to semis. I chose to not watch them, and then watch the like elimination games because that was more meaningful. But as soon as the Vitality game, for example, got to overtime on Ancient, I had to tune in and watch that. You know, but I'm just watching one device going and doing it that way. But yeah, it's tough on these schedules. If you're not like, you're not working the event and you're trying to follow it and you're doing anything else, it's difficult. So I don't know what like casual fans are doing. Like you guys in the comments, let me know how many of these games were you watching? Like, were you just choosing your favorite teams or just when you could around your schedule? Like, how does it work for you? Let us know. Give us the information. But let's now look at our stage two results. And dude,
I noticed one is wrong here.
Is it?
Yeah, I will.
You're going to fix it?
Furia versus Foot. Furia did not win that game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's a red for both.
So yeah, we do our initial predictions. We always give you our thoughts on the matches that are coming up. So for stage two opening games, Mongols versus G2, we both said G2, win. Na'Vi versus Paravision, you said Paravision. I said Na'Vi, of course. Na'Vi won. Crazy
Na'Vi,
game,
of
though.
Of course. Like it was some easy slaughter from Na'Vi.
Yeah, you know, I'm just in my head, I only saw headshots from Bit, great plays from Mikazi, amazing calls and smiles from Blade. Watching the actual game and going through it was like mentally disturbing me, but you know, that's the reality compared to my
Isn't this the game that this like Blade clip came on Reddit where he literally like screaming in Ukrainian to Alexei B, I think? Like, how can you play default the whole fucking game or something like this? I'm paraphrasing. He did not say those exact words, but something along those lines.
Something to that. Yeah. So anyway, then we had Fury of Foot. We both said Fury. Foot won. I be keep praising him. I continue to praise him. Spirit of Stars, we said Spirit was Spirit. Vitality VC game, Vitality. Now, I was on the FaZe hype. I'll come on the FaZe later, but I'm not on the FaZe hype anymore. 3D Max beat FaZe. You got it right. I got it wrong. We both said Mouse would win. They did. We both said Falcons would beat Aurora. We were both wrong. Completely wrong. But the first team I want to start with, mate, is I really was harsh on the Mongols of what I expected them to do in the Budapest Major when they had Cobra Zero. What was his name? How have I forgotten it already?
Controllers.
I'm so sorry, Controllers. When they had a Controllers, Blitz was telling us, Mazzino was telling us, he was saying, why do people think we're going to be bad just because of this? And we're all thinking, like, Senzu's so good, you know, this is why. So then I thought, okay, now you're getting Cobra Zero, the guy you wanted. This is going to be better, you know? This is going to be great. You've had time to get ready for it. They get beaten by G2. Obviously, we both predicted that. Fury had obviously lost their opening game against Foot. It's the way they lost to G2, by the way. Like, ancient scoreline, okay. But you got dumpstered on Dust2. Like, you didn't stand a chance. And it didn't look like the Mongols we know and love. And then the Fury game, there was a battle here. There was a fight here. It could have been 2-0. It comes really close. But it's, again, another 13-2 scoreline.
Yeah,
it's the way they're losing some maps that shows, like, maybe we were right to doubt what you were going to have here with players, because we can all agree, give him more time. He's just coming, all this stuff. But, like, now I'm kind of, where am I at with these guys, you know? Where do I think they can go? Because we praised them. We didn't praise them. We didn't understand how they're going to use the system. And now look what we got.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, they are going to struggle this year. I think it's...
You're calling it now for the whole year, even with more time?
Unfortunately, I hate to say it, but I kind of am.
Okay.
And I think...
Why would you say that, though? Because I thought maybe with some more time, they would have a chance.
I think the reason being is, like, some other teams I can give more time, but they're in a different kind of bracket where, you know, the teams that they are chasing comparably to the teams that Mongols are chasing are very, very different levels. So the I'm just, like, trying to...
So Mongols being an elite team.
So for me, it's like, okay, Mongols, are they going to get back? And that's, like, challenging for top one. They're top three in the world. You know, they're in that at least top five vicinity. That's where I'm putting the expectation for the Mongols in this conversation. Whilst for, I don't know, a Liquid, it's more of a top 15 to top 8 to, you know, like that kind of bracket, 15 to 8th. So in terms of that context, I think they're done for this year. I do not think that they will challenge for top five spots. They might have a good tournament, you know, once this year.
Some deep run.
I think it's too steep for them to all of a sudden pick up this player, rebrand him into, you know, the new Senzu, and all of a sudden they're top one again. I don't think it's that easy. I think one of those pieces, like, the whole machinery kind of falls apart to some degree, and you kind of have to use this, like, tape to kind of mesh it on. And I'm sure that's what they're trying to do, but eventually it's going to just make you fall even deeper. So to some degree, they have to take a step back and just rebuild the process with everyone. And that will take time. That will take, like, 3 to 4 months. They kind of have to treat as a new team-ish. Otherwise, I actually see it as something that will, like, fall like a house of cards much faster.
See, I'm going to disagree with you, because I will say that I feel like during the Controllers era, that time, there was no pressure, no expectations. Yeah, it was a different way they could play a game, more risk-taking. How they were approaching situations, their system, they believed them, just slotting him in, making him feel confident. Yeah. And also, he was an older player to feel that confidence in the games. Yeah. So yeah. He didn't have the same kind of maybe mental problem, not mental problem, but like a mental block in some moments. But with Cobra Zero, it's like, this is the player we wanted you to have. This is the player that you're expected to do well with. Now, they're not instantly going to get the fast results, but I don't think it's going to be maybe as bad as you. So I think they can still challenge in that top 10 to top 5. And I just think with some more time, I still believe in what they can put together as these pieces. I just think it's going to take longer to get Cobra Zero comfortable and them all handling now still like the same expectations.
I'd be surprised if the Mongols would chase down and reach a top 5 that includes Vitality, Furia, Falcons, Mouse, and Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
With the addition of Paravision, Aurora with Anubis back, and a G2. I think that these teams will be ahead of the Mongols for this year.
Okay. Well, let's see. Let's wait and see.
Yeah.
You mentioned another team just there that we have to touch on next, Paravision. You actually had Paravision going to playoffs, which I didn't think was going to be possible. I wasn't that hyped on the Blast Bounty run. And I'll just give you my take on it. It's not like I think your take was bad. Because they won Blast Bounty, you can for sure say that that's a team that can make to playoffs. But I feel like at these big events where it is a Krakow, Cologne, the majors, it's the same thing. They can go so far, but then also some of that inexperience, some of that feeling the pressure, some of that, you know, players not showing up in the right moments comes in for them. And I just personally knew that they would get past the first stage. I didn't expect them to be going out in last place, by the way. I thought they would get a win in stage two. Like I thought they would win Astralis, but I think still they've got a hurdle to overcome as a team, as a very young team, before we can see them being like a regular playoff making team. It's an exciting team. It's a fun team to watch. Obviously we praise Dastan and James so much in it, but the younger players are getting up on their ways as well now, but they still, for me, it's not like a team that I expect to see in playoffs.
I still think that they will make plenty of, like, I don't know how to phrase this, but heads roll or something this year. I mean, you can look at the results. They didn't play badly. I mean, they could have 2-0 the Na'Vi. It's a 13-11 on Dust2. It's a 16-19 win on Anubis on that map. You look at the Astralis one, Overpass, 13-11. 16-13. They are still making it close. They're making it very competitive, the games that they are playing. They're not falling off, like they are not at all in the game. I think they definitely are going to have their struggles with people looking at them more, trying to figure them out, you know, and it's a new kind of experience for a lot of these young players to get a test and taste of being anti-stratted and people knowing what your kind of patterns are as people. Mm-hmm. On the server. I understand that, but I still think that they are unique enough for some of these teams to not being able to find the answer, even though other teams will.
Yeah. I'm not in any way down and out on them, but like this performance doesn't surprise me in some ways. You know, like I'm not going, oh wow.
I'm not
like,
surprised either.
A few shocked.
But just at the same essence that I, you know, have picked foot or like, you know, this is initial mashups. Na'Vi, Paravision, both are shaky. For me, it was a 50-50 game, you know?
Okay.
It was.
Okay. I'll let you say that.
Yeah.
I mean, comment on that.
I think it was.
I'm not biting to your bait. I'm not biting on that at all. We can go from Paravision, though, the BC game. So they end in 13th to 16th place, losing to Vitality and FaZe. Obviously, no shame in Vitality losing to them. Obviously, the big story of that whole game was just Simple Zywoo, Simple Zywoo, Simple Zywoo. Yeah. They even did like the head-to-head interview with the guys and stuff. It was like a videos being made, content. You've got the two of the biggest names, not obviously, Donkey's also included now, but two of the biggest names, the bigger names in Counter-Strike, finally going back-to-back against each other again after so long. Yeah?
Yeah.
And Simple still does some simple things. But I mean, this is where you can see the gap. The gap was so big. Like, this is where you look and you just think, it didn't matter what BC game tribe, they can tell themselves that like the game on Dust 2 was competitive, yeah, and they had chances. But I'm going to say, I never felt like Vitality were out of control in this game.
No.
You see the clips of like Simple talking to his teammates and like checking out a game as well?
Was it the one, I saw one clip where Simple missed his Molotov window and then flamed Crazy for not planting safe in a like a 2v3 round on B side?
Oh no.
I saw that clip.
I didn't see that one. I didn't see that one. Okay. I saw the one where he was sat there like this, yeah? And he was like not doing too much and he was like frustrated. And then like they were fist bumping and he didn't, his fist bump was like this, you know?
Yeah.
Like just to the side. There was not. And it's like Mutris made a crazy clutch and they should have hyped him up. They should have given him some confidence. So the vibes felt a bit dead at times, but obviously this is a highly competitive person, you know? Some people are not going to be the vibes guys of the team. That's what they got Taz to also help out with and make sure things are on track. But I still think that this performance, like, where do they? They end in 13th to 16th? Yeah, 13th to 16th. I still think that's a respectable run for a team that people didn't have even maybe making out the first stage. I had them making out the first stage. I predicted it. But I mean, a lot of people didn't have 100%.
I think they did their job. I think they went here and, I mean, the only real objective for BC Games was to either gain a few VRS ranks or stay on the same level by not losing both games. And, I mean, they achieved that. They won the points they needed to stay relevant, to be able to be in this position again, to qualify. And that's, I mean, why they bought the core from Seoul, why they assembled this team in the first place. So I think step one in the process for them is completed. So I think it's a good job on them.
Definitely. Then we see, obviously, Simple go up against FaZe. Remember, the FaZe opted to have Brokey back, not keeping Simple, just as another. So it was storyline games for Simple, by the way. There was a lot they had to deal with. And they lose Dust 2 as the pick of BC game. They then win Nuke. Now, when I saw the Nuke win, I was asleep after the first game. Yeah, I thought BC game were done for. And then my eyes were woken up and I said, okay, we got a game on our hand. And Ancient, it was not maybe closer than what the scoreline says. It was a little bit closer. There was almost that 1v4 from Simple.
But don't you think it's embarrassing that FaZe picked Nuke and lose 13-6? When they converted Pistol to 3-0.
Yeah. It's kind of rough. You had the game in your hands.
You start with a 3-0 on T side. I mean, it's fine that you struggle on T side, but I think it's...
We also say how good Carrigan is. You know, he should be doing better than that. With all these pieces he has right now. Like, the thing is... I'll come on to FaZe later because I don't want to jump the gun. I'll still stick BC game. But then, obviously, when they got to Ancient, did you see that, like, almost 1v4? And how both Brokey and Simple were trying to, like, read each other? And they basically waited, like, both in cave. Like, Simple's cave entrance just waiting. And Brokey's, like, towards the tucked in bit. And they're just looking, waiting to make a decision, see what happens. And they both just waited time. Simple goes forward. Brokey just finishes him off at the end. But it was almost, like, an incredible 1v4 from Simple. So there were some moments in there. Right. Yeah. There were some good moments in there. It was nice to see Brokey have a good game overall. Like, I'll say that was a positive at least. Because I was still not sold on him completely.
Simple got soul red, man.
Hmm?
Simple got soul red.
Yeah. But they both kind of read each other, right? But, like, Brokey just never went for it. Yeah, so
Brokey wins the time.
Yeah. It's completely. Good. Completely. But, like we're saying, BC game, this was still positive. Yeah. Considering expectations, considering how bad their online games would be.
100%.
Putting them on land, this is not too bad. I'm just excited to see what they can do going into future tournaments and looking at that.
Yep.
Next one, NRG, the boys you played Face It with. Honestly, yeah. Beating Bait, not too bad. Beating Astralis, pretty good. Yeah. Losing to Mouse, no shame in that. Taking a map off Falcons, yeah. Is impressive. You may have got dumpster on your pick, but like, did you see any of this game?
No, I didn't actually catch this one. Unfortunately, okay. I wanted to look back at it just because I had the little story face it with them. But I mean, I'm not like, it's a weird one because I feel like NRG, they played really well this entire tournament. I think even in the mouse game, there were moments where they could have gotten control, of the map and the match. If you look at, they obviously, their CT side was struggling on Dust 2. They only got two rounds picked up. And I think one of them was a clip from Nitro where he just kind of pushes them, maybe. Either way, it's a game where they could have taken better control. They had a chance to win. Normally, we don't see, a mouse team have that much success on the T side. That's where they struggle. And our NRG couldn't capitalize a little bit on that against them. But they could have easily won Dust 2. Ancient, kind of a... reverse story. It's the normal mouse back. They're very, very solid on the CT sides. NRG just couldn't get the T side rolling. But picking up 9 rounds on both maps and being in a situation where it's scary for a top team like Mouse, I think still is pretty good. It's good. It's great even to some extent because of where NRG is kind of at or how you view them.
Well, this is another thing about NRG now. Imagine if Nitro was there for the major. They could have easily made stage 2. Like what I'm seeing is like Daps obviously had to fill in. Nitro's having a baby. It's just kind of, it's very important. Family life. But I mean, it was the kind of what if moment now. And at least they didn't fall off and they're still competing with it. This is what's positive. So I'm not going to jump the gun on them. I'm not going to say like there's going to be wow moments from this team. But my eyes are open to their next games. Like I am interested to see what might happen to them in the future, what they might be able to do,
Yep.
I think it could get very interesting. Next from here, Foot, who we keep talking about very positively. Foot is an exciting team to watch, man. They start off beating Furia, 3 maps against G2, 3 maps against Astralis. I do feel like Astralis is a team I would put them above, personally. But I don't know.
Kind of ranking.
Same category? Okay. This Ryu guy, very good. I don't know how well he played in these games, but Ryu on Astralis is very good. But Foot for me is like between Lounx, Drugs, Demon, these guys can all have pop-off games. Even, by the way, Symmetry, however you want to say his name, he definitely played better here than he did at Bounty as well. Which is impressive.
I think their individuals look really, really sharp. And obviously they've made kind of a
meteoric rise, yeah.
Yep, something along those lines. Rise.
Meteoric.
And I think it's kind of hard to just keep that going. I think eventually you're going to hit some walls and they're making things competitive. They are doing really, really well against every single team. They just need to keep grinding. We just need to see more of them. They're super exciting. The only thing I'm scared about is, this is a team that, depending on what happens, is a great farmer team for a lot of these kind of like Liquid doesn't find the success they need. Okay, let's look at Foot. What individuals can we grab and kind of make our team work again? So they're in that space right now for me where if people are going to scout the next talent for a big team, they are the ones you're looking at.
But they didn't sell their core. Foot is a real football organization from Turkey. Yeah. I don't think they need to sell off players unless obviously the players want to leave. And they seem
that's
to be
the problem.
A close
if the player wants.
Yeah, but
which
it
they
seems
will.
To be like they're close together.
Yeah.
They a lot of them, other than Lounce, came up together in Na'Vi Junior. Yeah. They've been from this journey together. They're as long as that can still work. And by the way, I think Coolio deserves a lot of credit as coach.
Yeah.
Because he's really trying to level up these young guys. So right now, if they can survive this year without changes, they can be destined for some good things. Because Na'Vi really cooked with this team. Na'Vi did great things with this team. Being able to put this together.
I don't think they will survive the year without someone getting stolen.
You think someone will get stolen after Cologne Major?
I think I think FaZe is one team. Yeah. I think Liquid is another. I think if there is going to be kind of a swap after the first period, like let's say half year, where Mouse could be a potential, where they kind of look at some of these players, depending on what happens, right? Who gets what?
Yeah.
But these are Na'Vi as well. Is another team that I would like. Okay. These are teams that I could see within 6 months steal a player from Foot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. I don't want to see it. I hope that they can last. Hope that they can stick it out. I want to see this team, same team for the year. That would be the ideal situation. Just because
I'd be very surprised.
I get it, but like breaking up that team would ruin a lot of the work for the future for them. And sticking sometimes together when you've got
welcome
just
to
the
esports,
right,
baby.
No, I know we've been this a million times, but it's like this is one of those teams. I don't want to see them touched. I want to see them be able to just stay and do okay. You know.
Yeah.
Then we're going to come on to, I'm going to call this a Na'Vi disappointment. I'm not going to call it a failure like it was in Blast Bounty. I know I already joked and said like good game from Na'Vi against Paravision, but they could have lost that series for sure.
I mean, you're probably looking at the Dust 2 or against Spirit mostly.
Dude, it's not even just that though. It's like you should have closed it out on Mirage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like this is a Na'Vi who have been playing against Spirit and had struggles against Spirit now for like 2 years. Yeah, it's always been a tough
something
team.
Something ridiculous like the matchup itself, you know, that we used to call like a rivalry matchup, or
it's
we still do to some
not
degree.
Anymore.
But we still do it like a talent desk, like this is a
you
know, derby of some sense or whatever you want to call it. It's like 11 to something to Spirit, like 11-2 in the past.
In maps, it's 21 wins to 8 wins of Na'Vi. And that goes all the way back
like,
to Katowice.
It's like ridiculously one-sided.
Yep. Yep. Spirit and Halley and I don't know, it doesn't matter who's IGLing, they've worked out how to deal with him. Yeah?
Yeah.
How to deal with Blade's system, their calling, like, this isn't a problem team for them. And then they come up against the Furia, who, by the way, Furia is not in a good shape.
No, they
and they lose
terrible.
Mirage even worse than they win Inferno. And then they get lost. Their Dust 2 look crap this event. Na'Vi's Dust 2 was crap. And this, by the way, wasn't even like bit underperforming or anything like that. We weren't maybe getting the same wonderful as we was at the Major.
Yeah.
But these games hurt me. As a Na'Vi fan, these games are like... Because I remember, I stood here and said, no changes. I'm happy to see Na'Vi make no changes. And now I'm thinking... Do I regret saying that? Like, do I actually want changes?
I mean, yeah. It's kind of hard to digest it because Fury is not in great shape and obviously Na'Vi isn't either. I don't
you
know.
See?
Na'Vi is in a weird bracket for me. I don't know how they are for you, but Na'Vi is in the same bracket as FaZe. Not in terms of like how good they are, just in the bracket of they played the Major, they did reasonably well, probably saw some progress even at that tournament where, you know, they obviously fumbled a win against FaZe they probably should have had to reach a grand final of the Major, and that's probably how they review that entire spectacle, is that they should have been in the grand final and had a chance to win the Major.
Yeah.
And we look at them play now and they don't even look close to being on that level. And I'll say the same about FaZe. They don't look close to being on that level. And right now they're in that space where that's why I look at Foot as a team and say, they're probably having some eyes on from these kinds of teams because they can be a quick fix to reset the entire project.
When, wait, you didn't say some foot players going to Na'Vi? Because say this, imagine, I don't know if this is... I mentioned Na'Vi. Oh, sorry, I'm half asleep. I've been awake since 3 a.m. today and it's already now...
I think I did.
Midnight 25. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. But imagine if Na'Vi have a buyback clause.
Yeah.
Imagine if there's a buyback clause in there to bring some of them players back with Mukazi. Ooh. Ooh. That could shake things up.
Would you be happy then?
Yeah. Happier. But I mean...
Yeah.
I'll try and find out some information about that. I'll try to take a look at it. Next team to look at. 3D Max. You know what? With 3D Max...
Every eternal time I confusion.
Give up on them, yeah, every time I give up on them, every time they're I'm my, like, this they're, team,
they're the new VP.
This is a great way to describe them. So look at this. They beat FUT, which was crazy for them to beat FUT. Yeah, I'll take that as a win. Then they beat BC Game. Cool. Then they beat FaZe. By the way, they played a lot against FaZe. And I always say 3D Max's way of playing is so standardized that it like... feeds into a FaZe team or a Kerrigan team. You know how to play against it. You just overpower them, no problems, yeah? But there's a caveat with this one because normally, pretty much every game except one series that they've played against each other in EPL, FaZe have won always, yeah? FaZe have been able to handle this team over and over again. It's always been in favor of FaZe. But this one that they win, there was a little thing with a computer problem that Twist was having, admin rushing him to do something, he said. I wasn't at the event. I can't confirm or deny any of this. Just what Twist posted. But Twist had a 0.50 rating event, map. Sorry, series, two maps. Losing 3D Max. I'm not going to say that's the reason, but like there was something that went on that wasn't maybe normal within all of this.
I still thought that 3D Max would win this game.
Yeah, no, I know.
Because FaZe to me is just, ugh, like.
Yeah, but okay, they finally beat FaZe, yeah? So even if I ignore the result against FaZe, they play Vitality, they don't stand a chance. They play Falcons, they don't stand a chance. And against the very elite teams, 3D Max isn't there.
Yeah,
3D Max is definitely not there. They never have been. They are going to struggle there. But I'm not going to be pulled back in by some of these. They just beat FUT, BC Game, and FaZe. Still not going to be like a wow team for me. Can you pinpoint like what you think maybe might be missing for them? Because they've tried everything now. We've had the Maca thing. We've had the Gravity now IGL.
I mean, it's simple. It's their individuals are not good enough. It's not that they are bad. I think all of these individuals are great Counter-Strike players to their own right. But when you are going up against teams that have Monesi, Nico, Kiyosuke, and you look at 3D Max, who am I comparing them to?
Yeah. Like,
which player am I putting against Monesi? Am I putting Maca versus Monesi? Who's going to win that duel? But like, is there any player on that list that you would pick over any on the Falcons? Like, there's
IGL.
A degree of skill that is, you know, watchable, tangible. We can see it. We can look at the stats, all of these things. I think, you know, 3D Max have an interesting way of approaching Counter-Strike, and it works for them and these individuals. But how much more? It's like you have, you know when your toothpaste tube is empty and you just try to roll out the last bit. How much more is left, you know, out of this 3D Max toothpaste tube, you know? So I don't know what to say.
Breaking top 10 in the world?
Breaking? They can definitely get up there with a good tournament win. That's easy. Or like a good tournament placing. And they have that in them.
Getting there and staying there.
No.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's where I can't see it. So they're just going to be a team that can fight it and then they're kind of gatekeeping the other teams below them.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it. All right, from 3D Max, FaZe. Oh, where do we begin with FaZe Devil Walk? So there was a time many years ago now that Mals was considered baby FaZe, you know, budget FaZe, whatever you want to call them. And they, like, dude, this is crazy.
This is 13.5, Mals
13.6.
Now.
Yeah, like, Mals are just, what do they say, mogging them? That's what you gave me the word, mogging FaZe. Like,
Yeah.
This shows me that Major Magic really is just Major Magic when it's FaZe. Like you can't defend this anymore. We can't even try and say like, oh yeah, that positive magic at the Major is going to take us into the next part of the year. No. Like we're really clutching at straws. We're really hoping for something to happen.
It's a weird one because they're still like HLTV ranking, ranked number 6 in the world. VRS ranked number 9 in the world. If I look at what they are producing on the server, this is a scary kind of thought. It's like, if you go down the list, how many teams can we say actually play better CS than FaZe right now? Obviously Vitality. Obviously Furia. Yeah. Obviously Falcon, Spirit, yeah. Mouse. I would say Paravision.
Yep.
I would say Aurora. I would say Na'Vi. I would say G2. I would say Astralis. Mongols, I don't know. I would say Astralis, yes. Okay. I would say 3D Max. I would even say Liquid. And I would say Foot.
I like Foot a lot. I wouldn't say Foot or 3D.
I think there's about 15 teams right now in the world that plays better than FaZe.
I think what FaZe don't have anymore is they don't have that scare factor. FaZe, to me, when they go into games before, even if they're down 10-2, 9-3, there was a belief that they could come back, and the other team also knew they could come back. So when those rounds started to happen against them, the other team's like, oh, no, like, I can't, you know, it's FaZe. But they don't have that scariness anymore.
I think teams look at FaZe right now. If every tournament was a blast bounty, whoever gets to pick first picks FaZe. Most amount of VRS points for the least amount of CS you have to play. Like, in this list. I that's how I view it, you know? It's a blessing to get FaZe right now.
Could this be, if it continues like this, I know it's the very beginning of the year, could this be the final year before Carrigan goes to coaching?
I mean, it could very well be. But that's, I mean, it's up to him. It's not...
Yeah, but I mean, like, how long does they keep? Because a lot of people say, oh, we should change Carrigan, you know? I'm not on the thing of, like, change Carrigan because I believe he can make pieces work. But it feels like the pieces he have right now, even he may believe in it, sometimes just doesn't work.
Yeah, I think one big problem is that they, in the past, have been so overwhelmingly better skilled than their opponents to some degree that they haven't even always needed to be excellent at calling, excellent at, they could just default their way into things very well with good communication and micro calling in the mid round. Right now, to play that style for them feels like a liability. And that's why we see Carrigan also have to kind of switch the approach a little bit and call and kind of run the game a lot more because they don't have that belief even in themselves to some degree. And it's a slippery slope for me. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah. We'll keep an eye on it. We'll see how they can do at future events. The 9th to 12th is kind of rough after how well you did in the Major. Especially considering this was on LAN again as well. Next, almost making the playoffs, but not quite. Astralis. They obviously went through the first stage, beating Pain, lost to NRG. That was the worrying sign. Despite how good we were praising NRG, it is a worrying sign if you're comparing Astralis versus NRG. Then they beat Game of Legion, they make it through. They lose to Spirit opening game. I caught the Spirit game. That was at least exciting on the Dust 2-1. I feel like definitely Astralis should have had that one. Like, there were so many good chances for him there. Then they beat Paravision, they beat Foot, but it's three maps. And they go three maps to Furia, and they can't quite make it work. Despite, like, Furia's overpass is now no longer what it was at last year. And obviously, Astralis do enjoy a bit of overpass. But, I mean, I thought it was going to be 2-0 to Astralis at one point. I really thought they were going to get Mirage as well.
They played great. Like, it's... like, if you look at how new this project is, the teams they're beating, how well they are playing, the eye test, everything, it looks like they have belief in the system that Huxi is, you know, running, and, you know, the space of Ryu, and they just sync very well. They look very in sync when they're playing, look like a real team. They have an understanding of what they want to achieve on the server, something that was completely missing and gone from when they had Device and Magisk. And I mean, you have to sing their praises. They were battling against the best teams in this world right now, and they were making every single game competitive. I mean, every single time they played, they looked like at some point, if they just won one crucial round, it could have swung in their favor. Even against Spirit, even against Furia now. I mean, I'm nothing but impressed. I think it would, I thought it would take much longer to integrate this and get everything going. But it seems like, you know, we've seen a revitalization of the other players as well, in Jubby starting to have, you know, some of his old self back, you know, producing really, really high quality CS rounds. Stare, obviously, been really good as well, but the new boys also, you know, coming in, and they're doing so good. Like Ryu on that entry has been, you know, incredible for them, and he's fearless. You can see it in him when he's playing. I think they got a great squad, and I'm excited to see Astralis. I did not expect them to do this well.
Yeah, they beat my expectations as well. And this is still very early days. Fousey has had great moments at the same time. Like, he's got big shoes to fill. The last AWP they had was Device, and then there's now Fousey. You know, second time he's been around this whole thing.
Fousey has been better than Device was last year.
Yes, by far. By far. It's not even close. Not even close. And then our last team to look at, Devilwalk, who won't be making it to playoffs. This one's wild. Second place of Blast Bounty with a standing into not making Krakow playoffs. It's Falcons. Oh, dude. Oh, dude. Watching that game was painful. Losing both games in overtime. Now, people can sit there. If you're a Falcons fan, you can sit there and go, oh, it was close. Like, you know, it could have gone either way. Blah, blah, blah. Bro. Falcons had every opportunity to close that game and win both maps.
Should we even start there? Like, first of all, against Aurora, I mean, they probably don't play overpass Falcons at all, which is why Aurora get a free map of Anubis right on the get-go. It's probably a really bad matchup for Falcons in general, because, I mean, Aurora spent, you know, an entire season trying to find another map they can play. So they've kind of, last year's kind of been like a grind for them just to get more maps, to find ways to win games. And it hasn't really worked out for them. But with the addition of Anubis, Aurora is a fucking scary team. They're a scary team to play because they are so good on this map. Like, and then, you know, the grind that they had from the past year, they can actually get two chances now to get another W. So that makes them super scary. I think it's fine that they lose against Aurora if they're forced to bring in Anubis in the map pool. Mm-hmm. But overall, they should be beating a team like Aurora. And then, obviously, then it becomes a little bit more crazy because they're losing a map and making it close against NRG.
Yeah, I thought they were going to lose the series. I truly believe they were going to lose the series.
People were thinking that, and I was like,
what am I watching? Like, this can't be Falcons.
And obviously some of their individuals stepped up and eventually they made it through.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only game they had full control over in this entire bracket was against 3D Max, which is a team that is much lower than them.
Yeah.
So they definitely looked shaky. And against Mouse Sports, if we deep dive into that match, I will just, for context, mm-hmm. any Counter-Strike enjoyer, let's say Inferno, you yep. have a CT half 7-5, you win T pistol 8-5. Dust 2, you win 7-5 T side, win pistol 8-5. That's what they were working with. This is huge leads to have going into halftime, where they pick up the pistol, but from here, something happens with Falcons when things are on the line. We see Monacy, you know, like, I don't know. I don't even know where to start. There's so many clips you can go on this match page, and like, there's like, oh, Falcons lose another 2v5, 3v5. I think they had it was a 2v5 on Dust 2. Mm-hmm. They lost I think it was the very last round in regular time. It was 12-11. Kioske is window AWP, and they're doing a B split mouse into them.
He got two kills, which
he
is
gets
great.
Two kills. They get another third one. I think Nico is in car. Kyosuke AWP window, and I think it's Kixan who is close tunnels. But tunnels is ish smoked, at least, but. They know position of the tunnel guy, and they know the position of the guy outside B.
Yeah.
And they, from a 5v2, where only, I think, Kixan had taken damage in the team, they lose that situation. And it's mm-hmm. it's one of those things where we could go into Skybox and just run it and just be like, ah.
Yeah, it was another one of those rounds.
Because it ends up in a, triple bring back for Jimpat and I think Sphinx, who comes from tunnels. They go into B. Monacy goes in mid. We have who is it left? Someone is tunnels. Either way, Monacy picks up a molly. He insta peeks into door, dies to the car guy.
Oh, Tessus is coming through.
Tessus is coming through tunnels. It just ends up like 2 1v1s, Jimpat ends up clutching from a 1v2. Wouldn't just like so many off sync moments happen in this fast paced kind of scenarios where they just have the map? They have it.
But doesn't this come down to you as like the team play is still not there for Falcons? People say it's the choking, people say it's the pressure. But like if I compare this game, the team play won it for Mouse, you know? Playing off each other, making the right decisions. Some reads in there, obviously, as well. The fumbles of, like... Falcons had so many advantages. The clutches as well, like...
I mean... There's plenty to talk about. This situation is just... It should never happen. I mean... You have everything under control. And especially when you get those entries so early, you know where they are. And mm-hmm. three of them die in within a second to make it a 2v2 and lose it. I mean, even the fact that, you know, you have people in C2 who can spam door if he even tries to enter it. And Nico is a bit unlucky, dinks Jimpat and gets instead. But even he could have just waited and waited and waited for Kioske's contact in window again. Kioske didn't need to rush out window and just die, missing his AWP shot and being like completely.
It was a crazy one. He went to refrag, but it was like a delayed refrag, you know? So he got two great kills and he saw his teammate die, so he thought he would go for it. Yimfat was way steps ahead of him.
Yeah, yeah. And it just looked really awkward. I understand mm-hmm. why all of these things happen. But these are the moments that they hate themselves for, probably.
yeah.
that has happened continuously over tournaments and tournaments. And I'm wondering how much these moments are starting to weigh on them, where it almost makes it worse and worse every single time.
And also, like, Zonic can't keep getting away with this, right? I love him as a person when I talk to him, and I respect him for the history he has in the game and the amazing work he's done as a coach. He's not to blame for these situations, but it has been now, like, you've got him, you've got Lars, they're working with the team, they're working with the players, and they've been stuck in these situations, and we keep seeing these same kind of mistakes. Where is someone not listening? Where is someone not agreeing on this? Or, like, I'm never going to blame the coach directly for, like, all of these problems, but there's some responsibility that needs to be taken at this point, because this has been multiple years now.
I think
all the lineups, all the players he's given.
The biggest responsibility I would put on Sonic is for, obviously, I think that Falcons have a team of individuals that should be able to not even be put in that position in the first place. They shouldn't be 12-11 fighting in overtimes, even against a team like Mouse. Even though I think Mouse is a great team, they should be doing better from the very get-go. Now, in the situation that we discuss, I think it comes down a lot to the players themselves. It's not something you can just say, hey man, don't throw. And all of a sudden...
It keeps happening.
It does keep happening.
We've been here.
But this is, you know, this is situations that if you would ask every single Falcons player what to do if you would video review, they would all know the answer and they would all point out the correct mistakes and what they should have done. It's information they already have, but they can't process in that specific scenario.
But they're not learning from it. Yeah. So even if you're watching it on demo review, even if you're going over it, it's the fumbles again and again.
Yeah. Like, and they'll probably so keep happening. The only solution is just don't put yourself in that fucking position. Be more dominant from the start. Make sure that the entire game plan and what you bring out on the server do not put you in that situation.
I don't think I've watched a team more where I see, you know, like I watch the beginning of the round, stuff happens and I say, oh, they've got this round, you know? And then I might go, I don't know. I mean, pick up a drink. No.
To be fair, like every single round they can lose it.
Yeah, but I'm saying they put themselves in a position where it's like they can win the round, yeah, and they're in a good spot. I could just turn around, look at my phone, get a drink, and then they somehow lost it. And I go, what the hell? How did you guys lose that? Like, how did this happen? How did we find it? And that's the problem. And this one's going to hurt for them. This one, they know it's not good enough. And trust me, there's going to be pressures from Falcons as an organization onto these guys eventually. And Zonic needs to find a way of everyone agreeing on these protocols of what happens and what communication is being worked on, or where, like, what read it is, or who's making the decision making. Because this has been a curse of, like, a lot of Nico's career. This has been, obviously, Manasi's been with him alongside it, but new players, star players, good position players, good role player, and you're still having it.
Yeah. I mean, what can I say? It's terrible. It hurts to watch. Yeah. And I can't even, like, I'm not a huge Falcons fans by any degree, but it hurts for me, so I can't even imagine what it does for the hardcore fans and followers of Falcons team.
Yeah. All right, well, that's our review of everything that's happened so far. Let's get on to our preview. We're going into the playoffs. We're going into the Krakow Arena. It's called the Toron Arena, I believe it is. How many seats does this have? Krakow, Toron Arena. Seats. I want to find out how many people they're rocking with. So is the largest one in Poland. Capacity is up to 22,000. So that's like using floor seats as well. I reckon it might have like 18 for this, I guess. I'll try to find out for when we do the next episode. But I'm expecting something good. I'd love if ESL did a 360 stage. They're not known for that. It's kind of not what they go for. But I would love if that, because that's what we had for the Krakow Major back in 2017. So that'd be nice to see. This is another thing, actually. Format. We spoke about it already. Six teams to one of the most prestigious tournaments of the whole year going to playoffs is not good enough. It should be eight teams. Yeah.
But it's also like you're grinding what? I'm sitting here, I'm watching 8 days in a row for the playoff to be six teams. I don't know. It feels weird that there's so much CS to catch up on. And then the end part is like this small.
Yeah. And then on top of that, I'm not defending Falcons as well, but they played two games today. They played 3D Max at the beginning of the day, had to wait until the end of the day and play Mouse. Yeah. We should be past this now in esports, in CS, where we need to play two best of threes in a day. One best of three a day. There must be a way to work this out. I know the calendar's tight, but ESL has a lot of the space on the calendar. It would just be better for the competition if it's only one best of three a day and we get eight teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, especially I agree. I hate six-man. I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
Do you not agree on the like only one best of three a day?
Well, I don't care about that, to be fair. I don't give a shit. I think it's better. But I mean, I come also from an era where we played eight best of threes a day in a tournament.
Yeah, but,
and it's like, unlucky, man, you're out on the eighth best of three. So, you know,
we've moved on past that now. We're not in those times.
We've moved past that, I know. Yeah. But I'm a little bit wishy-washy on that. I wouldn't mind if I had the privilege to play two best of threes. Mm-hmm. The only thing that for me is important is that if you do end up playing two best of threes, just let us have a fucking meal and pee and shit, and then
they definitely have that. There's more than enough time.
But it shouldn't be too much time either. It can't be play my best of three in the morning, wait 5 hours, and then play my best of three. That doesn't work.
But they
then
did
you're
that.
Fucking
they played at
cooked.
One. They played at one, yeah? My time.
Yeah.
So two your time. And then they played at 18:10 your time. 7 hour gap.
Then I disagree. I think that's fucked. I think if you play them in a row, I think it's fine.
Yeah, see? That's where we're at. All right, but where we're at with playoffs. So we have Spirit, Vitality making it through to the semifinals. I predicted semifinalist Fury of Vitality. You predicted Falcon Spirit. So at least I predicted teams that made it to playoffs. So I'm getting a couple of wins there. Quarterfinals, I predicted Spirit, Na'Vi, Mouse, Falcons. I only got Mouse and Spirit in playoffs from that. Not in quarters for Spirit. You predicted Paris and Fury of Vitality, Aurora. You did have Aurora in.
Yep.
So you won on this one. You did good.
Thank you, man.
How the bracket is, Fury Aurora, winner plays Spirit. And then you've got G2 Mouse, winner plays Vitality. When you look at the teams that we have here, I think, I wouldn't say Aurora is a massive surprise, but it's quite a big surprise. And G2's not a surprise, but it's like not a team I would have instantly thought would be doing Krakow playoffs, you know?
No, I'd agree to a certain extent. I think...
Because this was the first event of the year for G2 as well.
Yeah, I think for... I mean, there's holes in every single team right now. No one is stable. No one has found their correct rhythm of how to play this year.
Yeah.
There's been a new update. It changed, you know, quite a lot, even as an individual player, from how responsive aiming is and things like that, that kind of shook teams up a little bit. I find it nicer. Some others find it worse. Yeah. But I think for Aurora, having Anubis is a big advantage for them. It makes them relevant again. In terms of Furia, I think they look shaky as fuck. I don't know what's going on. One round, they look amazing. The next, they just fall apart like nothing. In terms of G2, they are, and always will be, as long as they have Saw, a very consistent system-based team. They know their protocols. They know what they need to do. They've had enough time to kind of establish most of that into their system. Hunter's gotten more reps as an in-game leader. I think they have a really solid team of individuals as well to do this with. I'm not super mega surprised, but a little bit. I mean, okay, if I would have picked like between a list, obviously I would put Falcons before G2, you know? Yeah.
But this is what happens when some of the favorites lose their
yep.
opening games and it throws the whole bracket into craziness. So we'll obviously talk about the team's whole performance for the playoffs as we always do on the next episode, but we will do our predictions here. So quarterfinals.
You've done a weird one, right? You've done the whole bracket
simulation.
I predicted
the whole bracket based on what I said, yeah.
So I will do the same.
Okay. Just, I'll run you through mine first then, because I already sent mine to our producer. So I picked Furia over Aurora. And I think Aurora is playing better CS, and I like what I'm seeing from Soulfly. Even if he played better in stage one than stage two, he definitely struggled more in stage two against the better teams. It's not what he's used to.
Yep.
But I do think Aurora struggle on stages. And if this is a big crowd and a big stage, I think that will play into a factor that will benefit Fury. So that's where I'm going with that one. Then there's Mouse versus G2. I'm picking Mouse. I just think Mouse's team play, their synergy, they didn't make changes even when we expected them to make changes. Things are clicking for them, and they're no longer stage chokers. Spirit Furia is then what I would imagine would be happening, right? If my wins go the way I've predicted, I think yep. Spirit's going to win that. Then I think Vitality Mouse, and I think Vitality's going to win Mouse. And then I think Vitality's going to beat Spirit in the finals and win the whole event.
Okay.
Where are you going, Mr. Devilwalk?
I'm going like this. Mm-hmm. I am going Aurora will beat Furia. I think it's their time. I think that when I look at things, I think that Soulfly looks like a great addition. I don't think that, you know, it's not necessarily being like incredible compared to Jota, but I think there's something different with him compared to Jota. I like that the mood in the team seems to be completely refreshed, renewed. They look happy when they play. Major is making clutches and plays that, you know, looking crisp and sharp, not at all looking like maybe at the end of last year, like people are calling for his head because he cannot frag type of player. I think a lot of the times when I've looked at their T side, they've completely outplayed their opponents. Absolutely, like, outplayed them outright. Most of the times when I've seen them lose rounds is because of either CT aggression or something has gone wrong where they cannot do their end call, essentially. And I think that Aurora is going up against a very shaky Furia. And I think they can take advantage of that. I still think Furia is a favorite in the matchup.
You're not factoring in the also arena or crowd?
It's also the factor, if you look at the map pool, Furia, are you going to play Ancient against Aurora because you veto Anubis, or are you vetoing Ancient to play Anubis against Aurora? So I think there could be a map advantage in that sense for Aurora if they play their cards right, and could essentially grind out a 2-1 win.
Okay. Next game.
Next game, it's G2 versus Mouse. I've picked Mouse. I think they looked solid. I think they still have it in them. They fumble a couple of rounds here and there, but they've had a little bit more of a clawback sense where they start winning some of these unlikely rounds where they always lost in the past. They've started to win, and I think that it will give them a little bit more belief, especially this win against Falcons. But against G2, I think Mouse is just a stronger team in general. I don't think it's going to be a easy game for Mouse by any means. I think G2 still has, you know, wrenches to put in the gear, so to speak, for Mouse. But I think Mouse. So we end up with a Spirit Aurora, and I'll pick Spirit there. I think they themselves look a little bit shaky, a little bit up and down. There's a bit difference in the playstyle. But I like what I see. The vibes are great. Donk is barely mad. He's got magics with the vibe machine next to him.
Yeah.
And it's all smiles on them. They're having fun. And I love seeing that. And I think that will make them dangerous going into this this match in Krakow. So I think Spirit in the final. And I do think Vitality will beat Maus.
Okay.
But I think we're going to see a Spirit win over Vitality.
Ooh. Okay. I didn't expect you to go for that. Why would you choose Spirit?
So... I don't know. Maybe it's an old sentimental heart, but I see the guys when they're playing. Just the vibes. I think it's a different spirit. I think it's a spirit.
I don't think they're ready for that yet.
They might not be, but this is not the greatest Vitality at the end of times they're playing. This is still a Vitality that has holes and has shakiness. I think if the game goes in the right direction, they can definitely do it. And I think a big up for them is like, if you look at, you know, even at the major, the amount of tilting Donk did or got to, I don't think that that is, you know, going to be a factor in a final against Vitality. I think he's going to enjoy his time and he's not going to have drop-in performances. He's going to just... Everyone's going to be on the same page. And Sontix has looked up and down, but great at times with his clutching ability and anchoring. So I just think that, I like the mix of them. I like it. And I'm willing to bet on them just because of what I've seen on their faces.
Okay. Well, let's see what happens when we get to the end of it all. But that is it for our preview and our review of Effing IM Krakow so far. And only thing left to do is our Q&A. Now, before we do that, Devil, I need to do my injection.
And then I pause, stop, pause.
Yep. So as always, if you didn't know by now, when it comes to the Q&A, you can join our Discord. It's down in the description, or it's just allaboutcs.gg/Discord. We take questions every week and answer them on the podcast. We're not putting this behind some paywall. We're not making sure like only select people can answer. All you have to do is join the Discord, take part in the discussion, and we will answer your questions. So the first one comes from Black Z, like a Dragon Ball Z name. He says, do you guys think Na'Vi have some buyback options for some of the foot players? The players look really sharp, could see Demon or Jugs as a good replacement for Bit if he would leave the team at some point. Well, I actually touched on this. I don't know.
Great question.
But I think it is a very great question. It's a question I will try and find out. I mentioned this earlier in the show. And the reason I want to find out is because Na'Vi have always been good with their contracts and smart with this stuff. But I don't know if Foot would have agreed to it. But you would still hope, because obviously Na'Vi were smart enough to let this team go. They were grinding up through the rankings so well. Make the money from them. Don't want them to compete because they can't be at the same major under the same organization name. But if they raise these players up and they got a good relationship with them, Army, the head of esports, he's been so good like in terms of players just wanting to like follow him, learn from him, grow with him, that it would not surprise me if they had this option at all. Then it'd be really good for them, especially helping out Na'Vi. And it would undo what I like in Foot, but at least it'd be reunited with Mikazi.
Yep. And we got another question from our regular Scourger.
Yeah.
The only viewer that has seen the podcast live.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Came down to Budapest and saw one of the actual episodes being filmed when we were doing it with Starladder. That was epic.
Yeah. He has the question, is this perhaps the stupidest reasons to go down a map? Care to share the stupidest reasons you can remember of a team having to forfeit a map? Also, Virtus Pro looked awful in this BO1.
Best of one.
So this is a photo he posted as well of the match page of Nemiga versus Virtus Pro, where Virtus Pro forfeit the first map Ancient due to missing cameras for two players. And just to give you some context, pretty much every single tournament you play in Counter-Strike today requires you to have a webcam so that either, you know, the admins can tell you to put it on, view the keyboard, whatever. You might need an overview if people are potentially thinking that you're cheating.
It's normally this now, right? It's normally like the face camera, so I can see if you're looking at like a radar, yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
And then one from behind that shows your screen.
Yeah. So this is a normal thing. Like, it's not something like, mm-hmm. Who has a camera? No, everyone has a camera. If you're a CS player, you have a fucking webcam because you are forced to have one. And for them to not have cameras ready and have to forfeit a map in a tournament, which they know way before
mm-hmm.
they need to, is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Does that mean it's the stupidest reason to go down a map?
It's probably not the stupidest. I mean,
I can't think of anything else. You would know more.
I mean, I played a mixed team, okay? I played mm-hmm. a mixed team. I was just like, let me actually put it up. This is a Swedish mixed team that we just mm-hmm. joined a tournament randomly. And we're playing, it's the WCA Qualifier 2017. And we are playing Flipside Tactics mm-hmm. with Electronic Markolov, World Edit Blade, and Waylander.
Waylander!
And we had to forfeit the first map because we couldn't find the fifth.
Yeah, but that's probably happened lots of times.
And we
that's the stupidest.
Won the second map, 16-12. I was calling, by the way. And yeah. It was me, Sippe, Pronax, Rusty, and Brolan.
Nice.
We go on train, we lose 16-13 and lose from there.
So you lost the map because not having a fifth. Who didn't turn up?
Well, I think, if I remember correct, I think we were supposed to play with the Norwegian 1.6 player Kalle.
Oh, no, Kalle, yeah.
The Norwegian. Great player. I think it was like top 5 in the world at some point in 1.6. But yeah, I think he couldn't make it. And then we were scrambling for like an hour trying to find someone that we thought would be good enough. But no one could. They either had prax or, you know, whatever. So yeah, they had to forfeit that map.
Well, VP is definitely the stupidest because they're playing in these tournaments all the time. They know they need these cameras and that's it, yes. Right? There's no other way to do it. So, yeah, that's kind of crazy.
We were just five buddies, man. We were just
five
dudes or four dudes trying to find a fifth.
And yours is a mix. Yeah, yours is a mix. You're not signed like these are to VP like that.
Zero prax, by the way.
Just chilling, just enjoying the game, just playing through some tournaments, you know?
Yeah.
All right, well, that is it for episode 49 of the All About Counter-Strike podcast. Thank you very much for watching and being here as always. Don't forget, we do have the knife giveaway going on up until the end of Krakow. It'll now be 2 videos back you would need to go. We must subscribe to the channel and comment on that video. It's on the video where we have the image of the knife being given away. It's a $1,000 Doppler Phase 4 knife that I'm sure people would love. So yeah, make sure you get a chance to enter into that. As always, the views, the support, the kind words, the fact that people enjoy the very different styles me and Devilwalk have and how we do the podcast, it's all massively appreciated. I can't thank everyone enough. You deal with our crazy tech problems and our different changing in locations and everything else all the time, our rants and our rambles, and you seem to be enjoying it. So we'll keep running the podcast. We'll be on episode 50 next time, 50 episodes as we get at the end of Krakow going into...
That's great, by the way. That's actually sick.
That's a milestone. First, I think 25 was the first one, so that was our silver. Does this make the golden? Then what is it, platinum for 75? I don't know how this works.
I don't know either.
Yeah, so it's a lot for me to try and do.
You're doing like the marriage thing or what?
Yeah, marriage and episodes.
Yeah.
We're basically married. Don't tell my wife. but that's it for the episode. Anything you want to say, DW?
No, I mean, hopefully I have a great update next time and I'll be on 3.5K.
3.5, yeah.
That's, I mean, if you see me on a Face It game, say hi to me. You know, there's been lots of people who've said they've listened to the podcast. They love the stuff that we're doing. So truly appreciate that. And I hope you enjoyed this one.
If there's any viewers right now watching who's played a game against Devhawk, tell me how it was. And if you played with me, played with him, sorry, tell us how it was. I want to know in the comments.
I hope it's not like someone that had toxic Devhawk at some point.
He's like, God, this guy's a fucking asshole. Like, fucking why did I have to play with him? All right, well, that's it. We're done and dusted. We'll be back on the 9th of February. So ready to rock and roll with you all. Thank you for watching. We'll see you on the next one.